Chris Johnston from Sportsnet joins us down the South Street Burger guest hotline, our NHL insider. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rob.
Does the Stanley Cup final not feel like a mile away now? It just seemed to end it and we're now way past it.
Yeah, it always feels that way, to be honest. It's because in the two markets, it's the biggest thing. But in 28, now soon to be 29 markets, there's a lot of other things brewing and going on. And you're right. You're right into the offseason, no break. And I still think we're going to have a pretty good week or two here of movement and changes and lots to talk about.
Well, let's wrap up. Let's put a bow on the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, you and I had this conversation. I've had this conversation with everybody, but wasn't in love with the first five games on the ice. Didn't think it was particularly compelling hockey, but no complaints about game number six.
Yeah, very, very tense. I mean, it felt a little almost unsatisfying the way it ended. Just, you know, I get that mistakes happen in a game. I mean, there's nothing you can do, but having, you know, seeing Nashville have that goal called back essentially because the whistle had gone, the referee had lost sight of the puck, and then they got a couple power plays and couldn't score, and then it's a weird goal, you know, with a minute and 35 to go left from Patrick Hornqvist that wins it. Just felt a little weird. I mean, part of that might be that I was in Nashville, and it was obviously disappointing for all the fans there and everything going on, but I was hoping for a game seven, but, you know, it was still pretty neat sometimes to see history close up. I think it might take us some time to truly appreciate or understand where the Penguins are and where Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are in our sport, but clearly this last 13 months has changed a lot of how they'll be viewed in history.
Okay, you brought it up. I didn't spend a lot of time on it. I mean, it was the wrong call, but it's a human call and it was made on the ice. Is there a fallout from this? Does the NHL now put in some? And I don't know how they could, Chris, but. Are they forced to address this kind of mistake moving forward?
Well, I think there's broader to be there to be asked about the level of officiating in general. You know, I know a lot of people out there were dissatisfied with you know, where they thought the standard was in terms of calls made throughout the playoffs, other mistakes that were made. And then maybe, you know, something like that call kind of stands out above the rest just because of the moment and where it was at in the series. But, you know, I don't see anything specific coming out of that, but it's not a good look. And, you know, I feel, of course, even for the official,
sure,
because they're human, just like players that make a mistake in a big moment. And everybody knows about it. Kevin Pollock is a very good referee. And, you know, he just had a bad angle on it. And I think that there's going to be more scrutiny going forward on the referees and their training and all that. But beyond that, I don't really see anything that could be changed. It's just, unfortunately, those sorts of things are going to happen from time to time.
I think the bigger bullet that was dodged, and easy for me to say, I guess I had no vested interest in it, but if that challenge on the Hornqvist goal was overturned and they did call it goaltender interference, that would have been a hornet's nest.
For sure. Absolutely. And you know, in looking at it closer, I don't really think, I think the right call was made. I don't think that's
that
should have been. But yeah, that would have been, I think we were all bracing for it, either an offside challenge or a goaltender interference challenge in the biggest games. You know, I kind of thought that karma was going to dictate we'll get one of those, but, you know, there's always next year.
Do you care to weigh in a little bit? And this may be a little inside baseball for some, but it does bug me, and that is the access to P.K. Subban. Did you have a problem the fact that he did not speak before, during, and prior to games five and six?
I did. I mean, it works on two levels. I mean, it becomes a media navel-gazing story a little bit, but there's two things to highlight here. First of all, he'd spoken a ton throughout the series, and a lot of the narrative that went on outside of the play of the games was about the things he was saying, whether it was victory in game three or him with the whole mouthwash comment with Sidney Crosby. And it did appear as though the Predators were the ones who told him not to talk. And then to me, that's kind of where the story lies, that you know, they said all along the reason this trade was going to work for them is that they were embracing P.K. Subban in all its gloriness, I guess, you know, what he does on the ice. But sometimes people don't like his personality, and then they get to the biggest game of the year and their PR guy grabs him as he's walking towards reporters and tells him he's not talking. So, you know, I think it's a legitimate story. I saw today at the Predators breakdown day that P.K. denied that it was the PR that shut him down, but I can say standing 7 feet away from where it all happened, it certainly looked as though he was told not to talk. And, you know, I think, first of all, when the sport is getting that kind of traction, especially in the U.S., I mean, very good ratings. I mean, PK is good for entertainment. You know, it's you know, it's not just that I was frustrated that I didn't get a quote from him to put in a story or something. It's more kind of about the principle and that, you know, when we get to the biggest games of the year, you want to hear from the personalities and you want Sidney Crosby speaking. And you know, Sidney's always, you know, done those sorts of, taken those tasks seriously. And it was a bit of a strange ending, but, you know, I will see if there's a fallout. I do wonder if the Predators view of PK has changed in some way. And if I'm being honest, I'm not sure yet, but it certainly appeared as though something happened there.
Yeah, and you know, I don't wish to bog down on it, but it's frustrating because it always seems like this league, when it comes to character, it seems to stop short. And I wonder if this is the NHL or if I wonder if this is the culture of hockey. Because the culture of hockey, you know, is not what PK or Jeremy Roenick does. We, you know, they go about their business differently. And I'm like you. I just want to know what we're dealing with here because, boy, he has an amazing ability of make, especially with those extra days. And you know this better than anybody because you have to work them. Those extra days, he was gold.
Exactly. And you know, you're saying that the Cup Final, you know, feels like a long time ago. I mean, it drags out. It didn't end until, what was it, June 11th? I mean, that's a long season. And if you're trying to keep people's interest, you have to do it one way or another. And if the games are every 3 days, as they were at the end of that series, and, you know, we need to talk about something. I mean, it's not just, again, about a personal thing here. It's more the broader, how do we sell the sport and how do we grow the sport? And clearly what was going on in Nashville was growing in a market there. And the TV ratings showed that, you know, that Nashville story was selling well in terms of ratings and getting people's eyeballs on it. And I just think, you know, that's one of the skills PK really has, in addition to his hockey skills, is understanding that and embracing that. And, you know, it's unfortunate we didn't get a chance to, I guess, hear his thoughts before game six, but it, you know, became a bit moot when the series ended and everything was over anyway.
So almost 20 years ago, the last time a team won back-to-back, it was about eight, nine years ago, the last time we had the same two teams meet in Stanley Cup Finals. What about the chances of both of these teams making it back? Is it possible we could see Pittsburgh-Nashville next year? Is it possible the Penguins could go for a three-peat? Is it possible Nashville can get back?
Yeah, I'm not ready to turn the page on either of them. You know, when you look at the age of the Predators players and the fact that, you know, all four of those D, I believe, are under 27 in terms of their top four, and then they're all expected to be protected here in expansion, so they're going to be around just as far as we know. You know, that's a pretty good place to build from. You know, they're going to need to make some changes up front, but I think that's possible. I think the salary cap looms now is a bit of an issue for Nashville, having to sign Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson this summer. But, you know, they are a team that I could see, you know, being better for this, being stronger in the regular season next year, and you know, aren't really poised to lose too many of, you know, their core parts here. That there's no reason they can't get back. And, you know, the Penguins, my belief would more just be based on the fact their stars are their stars. And, you know, Matt Murray to me looks like a, you know, very high-end goaltender, but they certainly have more holes to fill. You know, there's going to be a turnover among that team, but, you know, I think that could be positive. I mean, there's nothing about the playoffs that makes you say, well, Crosby and Malkin, you know, aren't still elite players and won't still be performing at that level. I mean, they could do it. It's even tougher than doing it twice in a row, of course, because it's even more mileage that they're dealing with. But, you know, I would think both of those teams, we're not talking about two teams that are about to miss the playoffs next year. I think that they're both going to be very strong.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest on the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Let me bring you into the Rob Kerr vortex. I said that we were done with the series, but you brought up Matt Murray. I posed this yesterday. Is Matt Murray the best young player in the game? Two Stanley Cups, Chris, and he still has that asterisk beside his name as a rookie.
Yeah, I'm still inclined to go with number 97 down the
highway. I know. That's the smart money.
You can make the case. I mean, look, he's definitely, in my opinion, in the very top end of the goaltenders in the league. I mean, it's a complex position for those who play it. It's simple for those of us who evaluate it. Look at his save percentage, you know, right back from where the AHL through, you know, last season in the playoffs and this year in the playoffs. I mean, he's right up there with the guys that are getting paid huge dollars, the Carey Prices, Braden Holtby's, you know, the players that are the best of that position. And you know, the fact he's played big games and won them, and he, you know, finished with two shutouts in that series, you have a lot of confidence in him. And if we were talking about a Canadian Olympic team in Pyeongchang,
yep,
I'm sure his conversation, like his name would be in the conversation to be there with Price and Holtby, and, you know, maybe some others that would be in that debate. But, you know, very quickly, you know, before playing even 100 NHL games, he's now recognized as one of the best players at his position. You know, when you make the young players argument, he is 23, which isn't old by any stretch, but, you know, Connor McDavid and some of these other guys, I think, probably still have him edged. But that he's one more piece from that Team North America team. 10 years on, when someone's looking back at that, at just how special that experiment was. And, you know, Matt Murray, easy to forget, but he was on that team as well.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by you still being considered a rookie, having yet led your team to two Stanley Cup finals. That's an amazing accomplishment. Let's talk coaching. Bob Bugner gets the job in Florida. The story here, Bob wowed them. Apparently his enthusiasm, his preparation, that wowed them. Bob has been kind of around for a while. This doesn't feel like, I know it's his first head coaching job in the NHL, but it doesn't quite feel like that to me.
Well, that's fair. I mean, certainly having been in junior and in a couple stints as an assistant coach in the league, he's not totally out of nowhere, but, you know, it was a big priority for the Panthers to get someone who was viewed sort of as a retread, or, you know, someone who's on their third or fourth head coaching job. They wanted someone a little younger, and Bob's still in his 40s to grow up with the team, so to speak, and then to be there for a while. And yeah, the interview did well for him. I think also his connection to some of the key players there, notably Aaron Ekblad, you know, who grew up in the Windsor area when Bob was owning the Spitfires, and became a good friend of Bob's son. And you know, Bob knows Aaron well. I think that is a key piece, because, you know, Ekblad had a tough season this year, had some issues with concussions, wasn't at maybe the level they hope, but, you know, they've signed him to an 8-year extension at, you know, sizable money. He's got to be a key part of that team. And you know, I think that was an extra little feather in his cap, just the comfort level with that player, and the fact he himself is a former defenseman. He's been working with a really good blue line, you know, in San Jose, that, you know, he's someone who can help get the best out of Aaron Ekblad. And, you know, I think that sort of weighed in his favor, in addition to the three or four other things, his credentials and that interview that he gave, that, you know, really seems to have sold Dale Talon on this decision.
Other team waiting for a decision now is Buffalo. It seems like publicly it's Phil Housley or Rick Tocchet. What are you hearing there?
Well, it sounds like Housley has set up an interview. So, you know, that's happened pretty quickly after the Predators season ended. And look, Jason Botterill was on the ice with the Pittsburgh Penguins team he used to work for when they celebrated the Cup a night and a half ago. And he made it very clear, I spoke to him briefly there, that he hopes to get this done within a week. So I think that is an accurate read by you, that it's likely coming down to one of those two or three. I mean, Jacques Martin is still an outside possibility, I would say,
okay,
who was coaching Pittsburgh's defense there, as someone who could be talked to. But it does appear that they were waiting on the Cup final ending to really get their man. So, and, you know, with Jason Botterill having worked for the Penguins, he knows what he has in Rick Tocchet and would know Jacques Martin well. And, you know, I think Phil Housley is similarly viewed as one of those ones. So it's hard to handicap at this stage, but I know that there's an interview coming there, and you know, I wouldn't expect it'll be too long before we hear who's going to take over that Sabre job.
Ownership issues. Who doesn't like to talk about the Arizona Coyotes? But we have movement again. Anthony Beraway's buying out his co-owners. We have talk about Seattle. Are we headed for, you know, another story or two here in the next couple of years about relocation?
It's inevitable, I would say. It doesn't appear to me that there's a rebound coming for the Coyotes if they're still based in that arena that they're based in Glendale. And, you know, there's still hope. The league said, you know, as recently as the Stanley Cup final, I was talking about possibilities of three or four different development sites for a new arena in a better spot to help that team grow. Clearly that the league is committed to them, is, you know, tried to really stick it out there. But if the Seattle situation becomes more real and the Coyotes are kind of remaining in the limbo that they seem to be in, yeah, I don't think it's going to be, it's not going to take a real smart guy to be linking the two possibilities. And there was already a possibility a couple of years ago where, you know, even Dave Tippett was telling people around him that he thought perhaps they were moving to Seattle. So, you know, it's not a front burner issue at the moment, I wouldn't say, because, you know, there's still a lot going on in Seattle in terms of trying to get their arena project, off the ground and really start getting that built. But it's sort of a race to see who can build them a facility because, you know, I really believe that they're going to get the traction they need to be there long term, playing out in the suburbs of Glendale.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest now, the South Street Burger guest hotline. Let me ask it this way. Help me unravel the web, which is the expansion process for Las Vegas. We're beginning to hear about names that have been asked or will not move. What are we hearing out there, Chris, as we get into, you know, the expansion draft this week? Dion Phaneuf's name has come up. What are you hearing?
Well, it's an interesting process. I mean, there's two things. What we're hearing now is because the deadline has passed for those players to be requested to waive their no moves. So it's fresh kind of news, if you will. Those decisions are being made in general. But, you know, the league is trying to keep any deals involving Las Vegas secret, quiet, until next Wednesday, the 21st, when they have the expansion draft held in conjunction with the NHL awards. And you can understand the thinking for doing this. It's because a lot of those trades will say, I'm taking player X from the Chicago Blackhawks and I'm giving you this. And you know, if they released all those, we'd have a pretty good idea of who is headed to the expansion team before the expansion draft is completed. But, you know, in the meantime, now you're getting a lot of news trickling out because some of those trades have been consummated either with a handshake or perhaps even a trade call. And, you know, we do know that the Blackhawks are one of the teams that has something in place with Marcus Kruger, you know, finding his way to Vegas. The Columbus Blue Jackets appear to have a similar kind of deal, and David Clarkson's contract appears to be the main part of it from Columbus's standpoint in terms of who's going there. And now even Anaheim, it sounds like that they've made some sort of arrangement where they don't have to be as worried about who they're exposing in the draft because they know who Vegas will be taking from the roster based on a deal that's been completed. So it'll be very interesting to me, Rob, over the next week, because there's a lot of time still yet for this kind of news to leak out, is if we do have a better understanding of what the team looks like even before they hold the official draft, just because some of these trades are being made. I mean, in the meantime, it sounds like Dion Phaneuf is not inclined to waive his no move. I can't say I blame him. He only waived it to go to Ottawa a year and a half ago in the trade from Toronto and you know, seems to like it there and has moved, you know, his life there. And you know, you'd negotiate those no moves. It's kind of an interesting process. I think that there's some pushback from the players when that news comes out, because now, you know, perhaps some in Ottawa might be inclined to blame Phaneuf if they lose, say, Cody Ceci or someone in the draft because of the complications it has. But, you know, this is all sort of the mechanisms are in place. And I guess the next thing to watch is the bio window, which opens on the 15th. I'm losing track of my days here, but in a couple days' time. And you know, that's I think we could see some interesting buyouts during that period, not just players that are at their end, you know, just with teams maybe buying out someone in order to make themselves be able to have their protection list fall together better.
Last one for you. What are you hearing about the local hockey heroes? My estimation, they're in the market for a goalie, a defenseman, or at least one defenseman, and arguably a winger. I would think they would like to be active, but they don't, you know, they only have their first round pick. They don't have a second or third. They don't have a lot on the roster to really move that I think they want to move or could move. What are you hearing about the Flames?
Well, certainly the goalie seems like the main priority at the time, and that would make sense. They don't have currently anyone signed, and I realize there's still time and players that are going to be free agents that would fit the bill. A few days ago, I'd heard them attached to Mike Smith. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but Arizona is in a position where they're willing to move on from Mike, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, the issue the Coyotes have, I think, is that it seems as though they're only doing it at a certain price, and it's a fairly high price, but there's not a huge market of teams that would be bidding for them. I think Philadelphia has some interest and might be in that picture, but if it's only Philadelphia and Calgary, it might not create the market where the Coyotes find that deal to be worth it. And, you know, another name that's going to be interesting to watch is Marc-Andre Fleury. Now that we know for sure he's waived his no move for the expansion draft, you know, he's going to be the pick from Vegas, from Pittsburgh, but remains to be seen whether he'll stay in Vegas and be the, sort of their first number one, or if he's a candidate to be flipped. And, you know, he's been connected to Buffalo, where obviously Jason Botterill would know him from the time in Pittsburgh. I wonder if maybe the Flames could be in on that. But, you know, the goaltending market, I think, is going to start solidifying around that draft, just because if Marc-Andre Fleury is getting moved on, I think the teams that are in the market for that sort of player will be pretty interested in his name.
Good stuff, my friend. My guess is when we talk in 2 days, something will have broken somewhere around the league. It just has that feel to it. Chris, I hope you're getting some home cooking, because I know you're back on the road next week.
It's going to be fun. I'm not complaining, man. This is the best time of year. I love when we get the transactions moving, gets the juices going again.
It does. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Rob. Thank you.